This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a volunteer-based community access station. For more information, go to www.radiokidnappers.org.nz. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this program available through funding the Access Internet Radio Project.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine, and thorium.
You're listening to Radio Kidnappers, the voice of Hawke's Bay, and I'm Lynn Trafford, presenting on behalf of the Hawke's Bay branch of the Royal Society of New Zealand, Hawke's Bay Scientists on Air. This program is your opportunity to get to know recently retired and practicing scientists from around the bay. With me in the studio, I have coastal quality scientist Oliver Wade, known to friends and associates as Ollie. Growing up in Devon, a most beautiful part of England, studying and working there, in Fiji, Barcelona and in New Zealand, today we will find out how this scientist has ended up working at the Hawke's Bay Regional Council in Napier. Welcome to Radio Kidnappers, Ollie Wade.
Oh, thank you very much.
It's lovely to have you with us. So whereabouts in Devon do you come from, Ollie? And was it by any chance a seaside town, one of those beautiful little towns on the coast?
Yes, I come from a town called Newton Abbot in South Devon, which is, it's not actually a seaside town. It's a market town, much like Hastings. But it's at the head of an estuary. I grew up looking down the estuary to the sea, so it's in a seaside area, but it's not a
right
typical seagulls and ice cream kind of seaside
well,
town.
Well, maybe that's just as well. Yeah. Seagulls and ice cream aren't all that good for you when you're growing up. You went to primary school and secondary school there, did you, Ollie?
I went to primary school in Newton Abbot and then to secondary school in Exeter. Yeah, so I used to get the train to school every day along the coast, which is supposedly England's most beautiful train journey.
I can understand that.
Which I used to do every day, which is quite nice.
Yes, you probably get just way too used to it. With the sea at your doorstep and the estuary there for you to grow up playing in, was there a time during your schooling, whether it be at primary school or secondary school, when you thought marine science is the kind of thing I want to do for my life?
I don't know if there was a specific time, eh? I've always grown up, I grew up by the sea. I grew up, my parents are big sailors and my grandparents were big sailors.
Oh dear, so it was in the blood.
So every school holiday we used to go to Europe for 4 weeks sailing, and we go to France and Ireland and Scotland, and I grew up, windsurfing and surfing and everything about the sea. Fishing and
it was kind of
I can never imagine life not being by the sea.
When you left school, you went to university.
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
In Swansea, in South Wales, by the sea.
By the sea.
Yeah, that was my main choice. Yeah.
It would be terrible to be landlocked in Birmingham or somewhere.
Yeah.
All right, and so you were doing a BSc. What were you studying there,
I actually studied development studies, which is, it's kind of a combination of a whole different range of things. So environmental science, economics, politics, a bit of anthropology. It's kind of learning about how the world is how it is and why it's how it is, and how humans interact with the world. And then I guess through the different courses you choose to do, you can choose how you focus it. And so I was a lot more focused on the environmental side of things than the economic side of things, so it certainly took a environmental focus for me, and inevitably, I guess, the marine environment came to the top of that.
I'm sure that happened. So when you had concluded your degree, you went off to work as a fisheries observer.
Yeah.
All right. Were you able to apply anything that you learnt in your degree, or was that sort of pushed to the back pretty quickly and you get on with observing whatever you were observing?
Some things, I guess the reason I ended up working as a fisheries observer was because when I was studying my undergrad and I ended up doing my thesis research for my undergrad, and that ended up being fisheries based in Morocco, and my supervisor for that was a guy from Oxford University, and I guess halfway through, at some point through uni, I thought, oh, maybe I should have studied marine biology because I really do love the marine environment. And I remember talking to Colin and saying, well, how am I going to tweak things so I can really get into working more in the marine space? And, you know, one of his bits of advice was, well, maybe you should go and work as a fisheries observer for a while, you know, and start to build up some experience in that field.
Cause it was good advice, really, wasn't it?
It was very good advice, yeah.
It has worked. It worked. Thank goodness for the supervisor. It actually worked. So, yeah. How many years were you working as an observer?
Oh, not for long, for about a year.
Long enough then for you to decide you wanted to come to New Zealand on a trip. Why did you do that?
I'd heard a lot about New Zealand, and it was somewhere people had always told me that I should go and visit and see what it's like, because I love the outdoors and I love the marine environment and I love tramping and I love surfing, and it's a good place for surfing and it's a good place for tramping. So I came here for 3 months for a visit and ended up staying for a lot longer.
Yeah, as happens, and it happens when we go the other way as well. Yep. When we leave to do an OE in England or in Europe, you know, you start off maybe going for the summer, the European summer, and then you get sucked in as well.
It's happened again.
Yes, it is, hasn't it? Whilst you were here, you worked on Stewart Island, in Northland, and at the Kermadec.
Yeah.
So that's quite a sexy sell, I reckon.
Yeah, I was just really lucky.
You were lucky?
Yeah, I was really lucky. I actually worked in a lot more places than that. I was based for the, a lot of the time I was here, I was based in Raglan.
Nice. Good surfing,
yeah. Funny. I was working on a waste minimization project through the recycling center there, and a few other things, a bit of community planting and things like that. I thought I'd try something else out, so I went to Northland. I just went and volunteered with Doc, doing mainly trapping in the Kauri Forest, which I loved. Mm. I didn't love the trapping so much, but I'd never seen a tree like a Kauri tree before, and they just took my breath away. So that was pretty amazing. And through that, I met people, which led me sort of 12 months later to go to the Kermadec, to Raoul Island. And that was, doing biodiversity work as well. So mainly doing invasive weed control.
Yes, that's what they send people to Raoul Island for. I didn't realise you'd been to Raoul. But it's a constant task. It needs doing, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And just, I mean, people, it's an amazing island, but the real treasure of that place is the marine environment. For me anyway, and I'm probably a little bit skewed in that view, but, you know.
Really?
It's when you go somewhere like that, you really get a feeling for what the marine environment should be like.
Yes. You know, so why did you go back to the UK? You did, didn't you?
Yeah, I guess home calls sometimes. And yes. Yeah, I'd been away from home for about 2.5 years, and then I thought it'd be nice to go home for a while.
A good job, didn't you, when you went back? The Centre for Environment, Fisheries and Aquaculture Science. Whereabouts is that centre, Ollie?
So that's based in Lowestoft, which is in... it's the most eastern town in England.
Uh-huh.
So it's about 3 hours east of London. But I was actually outstationed in the most westerly town in the UK, in Penzance, so right down the end of Cornwall.
From one side to the other.
Yeah, so it was about 10 hours' drive from Lowestoft. Yeah. It was about as far away as I could possibly be.
So, and what were you doing there?
So I initially joined as a industry liaison officer.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked with the fishing industry, so partly doing catch sampling, both onshore and offshore catch sampling, and also working on a variety of sort of different research projects and doing different surveys, different scientific surveys, benthic surveys and things like that.
So it was round about this time that you decided that really you should pop a master's into your life?
Yeah.
Did it all roll in together?
Yeah, I was actually...
It kind of sounds like it might have.
It did kind of roll in together. I was actually started doing a PhD study, which came to an end when my wife got a job in New Zealand, which is why I ended up with a master's, because I decided that...
Because you didn't have time to
finish it. Well, I decided that coming to New Zealand would be more beneficial for life than... completing a PhD.
Well, you can complete the PhD maybe at another time.
Yeah.
Maybe you can complete that here in New Zealand
at
some stage. So your wife was the reason you came to New Zealand?
Yes.
So you came to New Zealand when? 2008, 2009?
Yeah, about 7 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So why did you come to the Bay?
She got a job here.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's her fault again.
Yeah.
Was it a good thing for her to get a job here?
Yeah, it's been really good. It's funny because when I came to New Zealand before Hawke's Bay was somewhere, I hadn't really spent any time. And when she and we were looking to get out of the UK, she's from Finland.
Uh-huh.
But we were looking to get out of the UK and, yeah, we were casting around at places to go to. And then all of a sudden... she ended up getting a job here. So here seemed like as good a place as any. So
excellent.
We came here.
Good
so
choice.
I was just a tag on, really. Just
good on her. We don't mind tag ons on me. It's all right.
Yeah.
When you landed in the Bay, you did some work for Hohepa for a while. And then you were fortunate enough to get a maternity contract with the Hawke's Bay Regional Council when Anna Madarez Smith.
Yeah.
Had maternity leave. Now, if anyone listening to this wants to listen to Anna's story, that is told on Hawke's Bay Scientists on Air, broadcast on the 21st of December 2015, and it's available on the Radio Kidnappers website if anyone wants to see what it is that Anna was doing at the time when Ollie took over from her. So you did this maternity contract. What were you doing at that time?
For the maternity contract.
Yes, what were you doing?
When I took over from Anna, there was only one coastal scientist at the council. So I was employed to manage the projects that she was managing. So recreational water quality, coastal water quality, a whole raft of different ecological projects as well. I was kind of came in as, I guess, as the gap stopper to hold the fort.
It was a good job for you,
away.
Wasn't it?
Oh, it was fantastic.
It was just sort of a perfect match, really.
Yeah, no,
from one
great.
Side of the world to the other to land a job. And you managed to turn that maternity contract into a full-time responsibility. And as I understand it, for the day-to-day running of the Coastal Water Quality and Ecology Program and the Coastal Research and Investigation Program. Sounds really super for you.
Yeah, it's I love it.
It's
absolutely fantastic.
Let's talk now about the job that you have, and particularly we're going to focus, are we not, on coastal water quality. Why do we need good quality coastal water across our region? Why does it matter, Ollie?
Do you like going swimming at the sea? At the beach?
It's not just about swimming,
do you like to catch fish? Do you like to see...
eat them?
Do you like to see birds? You know, I mean, it's there's a whole load of things, you know. I guess for the ecological values associated with it, there's been a lot of studies done about the psychological importance for humans of a clean coastal environment, you know. And if we went to the beach and the water was dirty and you couldn't, you know, there was signs up saying you couldn't go swimming and there was dead fish washed up, you know, like it's not
what we want to see.
It's not what we want to see at all, you know. We want to see a beautiful environment that we can enjoy and that we know that all the creatures that should be living in that environment are living in that environment as well.
In saying that, we do get discharges into our sea, don't we? What do we have by way of discharges into our sea?
So, we do get discharges. I guess they're kind of a necessary evil. So there's the Hastings Municipal Outfall off Clive, the Napier Municipal Outfall off Awatodai, the Pampak Outfall off Whirinaki there. And I mean, the reality is, as humans, we produce a lot of waste. And that waste has to go somewhere, you know, and whether it's, you know, on land in a landfill for our solid waste or unfortunately to the ocean for our liquid waste.
We're lucky really that when we're talking off our coast here on the east of New Zealand, it's a long way to the next piece of land, isn't it? We're quite lucky, I guess, in that regard. What other discharges go down there, come out of our rivers into the coast?
Yes, so, I mean, the coastal environment, in the end, receives, you know, it's the receiving environment for anything that comes off our land. So,
chemicals?
Yeah, the chemicals from agriculture, chemicals from stormwater. If you think about a bit of water, I don't know, like it rains in the hills, it goes into the aquifer, it comes out of someone's hose pipe, they use that water to wash their car on the street outside their house, they use soap, that goes into the drain. You know, there's only one place that a drain goes, it goes into the sea. So yeah, there's a whole raft of things that end up in the marine environment.
And you're testing always the quality of that water along our coast, and we're talking from north of Wairoa to quite a long way down past Cape Kidnappers, aren't we? It's a big coastline. How are you collecting these samples, and what do you do with them, and what do you learn from them?
So I guess we have two main water quality programs. So we have through summer, we have a recreational water quality monitoring program.
Yes.
So that program runs from November till March, which is, you know, the popular swimming time. And so every Monday, we have two people go out from Napier, and one goes south all the way to Prongahau, and the other one goes north all the way to Mahia. And they basically take a water sample at all the popular swimming beaches and rivers in each direction, and then we use indicator bacteria for signs of fecal contamination. Those samples are collected on Monday, we take them to the lab, 24 hours later we get the results back, we compare those results with national guidelines about whether water is safe for swimming depending on the concentrations of those bacteria. And then we communicate that to the public health unit. And if we have had an exceedance of those guidelines, then we look at sort of further measures and either collecting more samples or whether we need to actually put up signs and advise people it's not safe to swim. But generally the water quality here is generally good for recreational purposes. It's really only if we have heavy rainfall we might have some issues.
Is our water quality, is it getting better or is it getting worse? If we go back some chunks of years, I don't know where your comparative is or how far back your trend analysis goes, but are we getting better or are we getting worse? Or does it depend on what we're measuring at the time?
I think to a certain extent it does depend on what we're measuring. I think the reality for our coastal programs is probably they haven't been going that long. So when you say, has it improved, you know, over a long period of time, and most of our programs have only begun since 2006.
So it's not long enough so yet to get that long. Kind of trend well, I was looking for.
Yeah, actually, well, our coastal water quality has. Our recreational water quality has been going a little bit longer, and things are generally pretty static or slightly improving.
Okay, that's good to hear.
But the thing is, things really aren't, in terms of recreation, most things really aren't that bad, you know, so things would have to get really good to improve. If you know what I mean.
Now, these studies are ongoing, aren't they?
Yes.
They are ongoing, so we will continue to build and get this trend.
Yeah.
What is the effect, then, that we as humans have? Are we goodies or baddies in this system? And what is the effect of our lives on the fish and birds?
I think we just always need, you always need to be conscious, eh, of what you're doing and what you're producing and where it's going. In terms of waste, and that waste is the soluble stuff as well. So what goes down your drain and what goes down your toilet. And so it's very hard to say if we're goodies or baddies.
We're goodies
really,
or
yeah.
baddies. We just live on this planet,
well,
and so does everything else.
You know, if I think of baddies, I think of someone's making a conscious decision to damage something, and I don't think people make that conscious decision sometimes.
We're better now, I think.
I think we're better now, and also I think people, I don't know, like it's a matter of you. How do you know you're damaging something if you're not really aware of the consequences?
Do you think we are always aware as humans, as users of the coastline, of the creatures that there are in our waters? And I don't mean fish, because I think we are aware of the fish. We get a lot of information about fish and whether we should take it or not take it and how much to take and trawling and all this kind of thing. But the other creatures that are found in our waters, do we even care about them as ordinary, everyday old chaps?
Or we may just not know that they
Yeah, I don't know that
exist.
We do, Ollie.
Yeah.
So what is out there that we should be caring about?
Oh, where do I start?
Well, just generally speaking, because it's the same with the birds as well, isn't it? We've got these creatures in the water and we've got the birds that come and go, but we don't kind of notice them, I don't think.
No, and I think one of the amazing things about Hawke's Bay is it's such a productive piece of water, you know, because we have all these rivers that come into Hawke's Bay, those rivers provide so much organic material and nutrients to the bay that they kickstart all these natural processes which really lead through to kind of the whole food chain, you know. So the reason that we have you know, these fantastic gannet colonies and things like that, and so many birds feeding here is because there's so many small fish here and bait fish, and the reason those fish are here are because of the rivers and the plankton growth that the input of those rivers provides and the habitat that those rivers provide for these small fish. And it's you know, it's really kind of that the whole cycle, and it's hard to pick one thing that we should, you know, that we should know about.
Sometimes also affecting the rivers, and you've just mentioned them, and there's numerous of them. We have things that we, as people, can't do terribly much about anyway. And I'm thinking perhaps of Mother Nature and her fury, erosion, flooding, weather conditions, earthquakes, tsunamis. These are quite vicious things that we, in some way or another, experience in the bay. They've got to affect what goes on in the water.
I'd think they probably, you know, they probably do. And when you get events, you know, like the storms in southern Hawke's Bay a few years ago and the amount of erosion that occurs through those events, there's only one place that you know, all that erosion ends up, and that's in the coastal environment.
In the water, yeah.
And I guess the hope that we hold is that the coastal environment is resilience, you know, and it is, you know, used to these kind of events to a certain extent. There's been studies conducted down in Central Hawke's Bay after those events around the marine reserve and the kind of rebound and the resilience of the organisms that live there. And it's surprising how resilient, you know, they can be. It's quite it's quite positive, really.
So the future looks bright.
I think, yeah.
You think so? Good. On behalf of the Hawke's Bay branch of the Royal Society of New Zealand and Radio Kidnappers, thank you, Ollie Wade, for being my guest on Hawke's Bay Scientists on Air. To find out more about coastal quality in Hawke's Bay or careers associated with marine science or work at the Royal Society of New Zealand, a Google search will keep you busy for hours. Please join me on the second and third Mondays of the month at 9:30 in the morning to meet another practicing or recently retired Hawke's Bay scientist. I'm Lynn Trafford.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a volunteer-based community access station. For more information, go to www.radiokidnappers.org.nz. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this program available through funding the Access Internet Radio Project.